Good morning. I'm here from University of Sheffield, so
just
it's myself.
Check Emma with the still on mute.
Oh.
No, it's not that. But
in the
yep.
box.
So right at the top.
It is, yeah. Okay. So, good morning. Presenting on elicited storytelling as a pedagogical task in a ESL, so English as a Second Language class, myself and my supervisor, Ray Wilkinson. Just as a way of introduction, it's that time of year where we're all kind of thinking about Christmas presents, and I came across this in a major retailer last week. And it reminded me of some of the key elements of storytelling. I'm not going to have kind of time to go through all the literature, CA literature on storytelling, but I will refer to it in the analysis. But just a couple of points that come up from story dice. That you need two or more players. That it's fun, that it's considered to be a game, so it's something that we like doing. That you need different elements. Sequential elements, but also the fact that you get a die that you can write on, so it kind of becomes personalised. But also, if you notice at the bottom here, it's the funniest stories that win. So it reminds us about how the purpose of storytelling and the stance that the storyteller might have. So in this case, to win, you have to tell the funniest stories. So, applying that to second language learners, storytelling should surely be something that they also want to be doing in their second language. And yet research from, for example, from Wong and Waring's book shows that in classrooms, storytelling often just becomes a kind of series of monologues. So what we were interested in is trying to see how some storytelling that came up in our data, was it a bit more interactive? Was it a bit more like everyday storytelling? So, like all good stories, here's the background. So we've got an ESL classroom in a private language college in the north of England. This is kind of what you'll be seeing in a moment. It's data from a conversation class, that's what the teacher called it. It was about 80 minutes long. We have a data set of about 14 hours. Some of it's in the private language college, some of it's in a further education college. But you won't be seeing that today. In this classroom, it's quite a small class, there's a teacher that's just out of shot. You can see his water bottle. And there's three students. So there's a Spanish female student and two male Qatari students on the right-hand side there. The teacher has given out a handout, which is entitled You. So it's all about you. And on it, there's a series of questions and prompts to provoke discussion. It's from a book called Discussions A to Z. If you're an English language teacher, you've probably seen it, used it. It's quite a popular textbook. This is the part of the handout that comes up in the first extract. So you can see here that it's labelled superlative, so there's a bit of a wink to some grammar there, although we're not really focusing on grammar. And you can see the first question, what's the worst, nicest thing that anyone has ever said to you? And at this point, the teacher waits for one of the students to reply. It doesn't necessarily have to be a story, but telling a story seems to be an acceptable response. And we get quite a few stories coming up in this class. There are other exercises. This is just number five, with prompts or have you ever eaten raw meat? Some interesting questions. Would you ever kill? It actually comes up in the lesson at one point. So there's lots of debates about in war, is it justified? You know, so it can provoke different kind of discussions. We would argue that this is an example of a meaning and fluency classroom activity. So it's kind of different to your standard form and accuracy activity, where you see a lot of those kind of IRE sequences. And it's kind of interesting to see how that overlaps. Okay. So in terms of our kind of research questions for this project, what we were looking at was, how do these storytelling sequences differ and resemble those in everyday conversation, particularly in terms of story launch, co-construction, and response? So those colours will kind of follow through to the analysis. We had a couple of kind of sub-questions. So how do these storytelling sequences resemble the IRE sequences or not? And how can second language teachers support learner storytelling if we think that that's something that they should be doing? So the kind of pedagogical side of things. As I said before, I won't really have a chance to go into the CA literature on storytelling, but it will kind of come up in the analysis. Right, time for some stories. So I've got two extracts out of several that we had that we were analysing. The problem with stories, of course, is they're quite long, so it takes a little while to go through them. So what I plan to do is show you the extract all the way through. You might just want to watch it this first time. And then I've broken it down into three sections, and I'll go through those three and play the sections as we go through. You've also got the transcript in front of you. So the question that they're addressing here is the one we saw before. What's the worst, nicest thing that anyone has ever said to you?
Okay, well, we'll have a look at this last part here then. Let's see what you say.
Worst, nice,
what's the worst? The worst is...
I understand. Okay, the bad.
Worst.
Nice.
Nicest. Best.
Worst. I study in a religion school.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name? One nun say me that pharmacy is too difficult for me.
Okay.
And I mustn't study
okay.
In pharmacy.
Okay. Ooh,
and
sorry.
I mean
yeah, so you would have been quite demotivated.
Yeah.
Okay. And the best thing?
Okay, so looking at the pre-launch sequence, kind of lines 1 to 10 first. Lines 1 and 2, the teacher is directing the students to choose a question to answer. Clara, so the Spanish student, produces a query about the first question, and talk between her and the teacher continues over a series of turns to kind of clarify some elements of the question. Interesting in itself in terms of clarification, but not storytelling. So, line 14, or line 12 actually, Clara makes eye contact with the teacher. So I'm going to play this section again. You can't see the video so well this time, but you could follow the transcript.
Okay, well, we'll have a look at this last part here then, just see what you say.
Worst, nice,
worst. What's the worst? The worst is...
I understand. Okay, the bad.
Bad, worst.
Nice,
best. Nicest. The best.
Worst, I study in a religion school.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, Clara's made eye contact with the teacher. She's self-selected that she's going to talk about worst. So she's kind of indicated which part of the question she's going to address. And she launches her story in line 14. I study in a religion school. So she's launched here in second position. It's in answer to a question. And, sorry, just moving things around. And the teacher kind of lets her continue with his mm-hmm. So we get this kind of continuum. So, moving on to the next section, following a word search sequence, line 16 to 26, the story emerges as a common type of story, a complaint story. If you remember, the eliciting question was relating to the worst thing that anybody said to you. You'd perhaps expect the story to have some reported speech in it, which it does.
What's the name?
A noun?
With a woman.
No.
One noun saying that pharmacy is too difficult for me.
Okay.
And I mustn't study
okay.
Pharmacy.
Okay.
So in everyday storytelling, recipients commonly align with the telling and affiliate with its stance. For example, recipients may display that they share with the teller the sense that the events being reported are indeed complainable matters, as Stivers, for example, has written about. However, this teacher seems to orient to aligning and confirming the understandability of the story or story elements more than to the teller's stance. So if we look at lines 15, which you've lost now, but you've got on your transcript, and 25, you can see that the response token mm-hmm, kind of promotes the aligning. At the possible end of the story, so 27-28, we get this teacher okay, but with this rising intonation, which perhaps encourages the Clara to clarify the rest with her gloss there of what the nun said to her. And then this is followed by two more okays, and then an affiliative response of the ooh in line 32. So, to finish off this story, lines 33 to 34, Clara kind of reiterates her stance, this time using a non-word sound, and then pointing at her head. I've had a Spanish speaker kind of tell me that this is kind of one in one ear out the other kind of gesture. So let's watch that again.
Okay.
Ooh, and
yeah, so you would have been quite demotivated with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's quite sad. Okay. And the best thing?
So in terms of response here, the teacher seems to find this kind of opportunity for a bit of teaching, language teaching in here, with the use of the word, the way he produces the word demotivated. There's this kind of pause before it, it's elongated. And then we also get the line 38 where he kind of explains it or provides a simpler version, makes you quite sad. So things that we found in all of the stories, so we've got the launched from second position, which is in response to a question or prompt, whereas a lot of stories in everyday conversation would come first position, some second. As opposed to the IRE kind of sequences where usually the teacher nominates, current speaker selects next, the students often self-select, and they're never kind of nominated to tell a story. I mean, ultimately, the teacher doesn't know if they've got a story to tell because it's all about their personal experience. The teacher seems to orient to understanding checks and or alignment over affiliation. And the teacher seems to, you know, use the opportunity for a bit of vocab teaching. What you didn't see in this story, which does come up in for all the others, is about this kind of co-constructing of the story, or various parts of the story. So if we turn to our second example. So the question here is, have you ever been the victim of a burglary? Which some people might have, this has come up before in terms of a bit of a British English expression of stealing from a property. I mean, generally, I think we think of it as your home, but I think the dictionary definition does say a building of some kind. So that'll become relevant.
Okay, so, very strange question. Have you ever been the victim of a burglary?
Yes,
oh dear. In Qatar? Here?
No.
Okay.
In
Thailand. In a hotel?
No.
Okay. So is it pickpocketing? That's where they steal from you on the person?
No. Just I was like, just to follow my friend in the restaurant, open restaurant.
Okay.
For I didn't see it like for 10 minutes, then I didn't find my phone.
Okay. Right, so somebody snatched your phone.
So, in answer to the question, Salah nods in line 4 and says yes. So, at this point, we don't know if it's going to be a story. We don't, you know, it might just be yes, and then they move on to the next question. But the teacher here provides this affiliative response.
Very strange question. Have you ever been the victim of a burglary?
Yes,
oh dear. In Qatar? Here?
No.
Okay.
In
Thailand? In a hotel?
No.
So, we would argue, and we get this kind of affiliative response to the yes, I've been the victim of a burglary, but then you get this kind of weird extended sequence of kind of probing from the teacher, perhaps checking that he understands what burglary means, but also perhaps encouraging to actually say more about the event, so both of those things could be going on there. So the teacher has accepted Salah's self-nomination, and he's trying to perhaps develop a story, and he's co-constructing. So let's move on to the second part. So we've kind of done the location of the story. Now we move on to the...
Okay. So is it pickpocketing? That's where they steal from you on the person?
No. Just I was like, just to follow my fashion. Okay. Restaurant, open restaurant.
Okay.
For I didn't see it like for 10 minutes, then I didn't find my phone.
Okay. Right.
So now the teacher is clarifying in terms of the nature of the stealing and puts forward the form of pickpocketing rather than burglary. So again, perhaps a bit of vocabulary teaching going on here. Again, this guess is rejected in line 21, but this time Salah follows the rejection with a description of what happened, which turns into the story. So we could argue this is kind of the launch point of the story. So this one is second position in that it's in response to the original question, but it's also in response to all of the teacher's questions, really. You almost feel like Salah's kind of defending himself at points here. What's interesting, again, is that once the story starts, the student doesn't really need much support. We get ums and we get okays again going through. And the student kind of enacts the story climax in line 32, where he gazes at the table and the phone, acts surprised as the phone's gone. So, I mean, another interesting element is how much do second language learners rely on enactment, if you think of the gesture in the first one. And if we move to the final part of this clip.
Right, so somebody snatched your phone.
So at the end of the story here, the teacher receipts the story with OK right, and then produces an understanding display of what Salah has just told him with the formulation of the reported event. So somebody snatched your phone. So again, we get this learnable highlighted with snatched, and also the teacher does do some kind of gestural enactment along with it. So to sum up, throughout these selection of stories, we came across five recurrent features. The second position launch, that the students always have to kind of self-select, which is different to the IRE sequences, perhaps something to look at in terms of meaning and fluency activities in the classroom. The teachers, you know, if we think of the pedagogical goals of the classroom, the teacher is still very mindful of those, perhaps more so than affiliating with the story itself, and the teacher's pedagogical response or emergent learnable. The teacher's co-construction of the story, I mean, it happens at different parts in some of the different examples. And I think in this one, it's more about kind of co-constructing a launch of the story. So as I said, it contrasts with form and accuracy type task, although perhaps we could argue that it is a kind of form of IRE. The research contributes to the growing CA literature on the second language classroom that goes beyond the IRE, which I think is kind of quite in vogue at the moment. Mm-hmm. And also just generally in terms of storytelling in institutional settings where there's the institutional goals that have to also be adhered to. Thank you.
Thank you. Some time for questions, comments, observations. Marco.
Thank you for this presentation, Emma. There's a lovely detail, just briefly in the first extract, mm-hmm. when Clara asks, 916, what's the name? And one of the students, Ahmed, gets exactly what she's asking done, but teacher goes a Catholic school.
Yes.
It nicely matches what you were saying in terms mm-hmm. of the teacher not quite affiliating as a person with doing ordinary interaction, not the kind of recipient. And it's nice evidence for him engaging in corrective monitoring. She said the religion school. He didn't correct it. He went, 915. But when she asks, what's the name, he seems to take the opportunity to correct it, a Catholic school, which is would be the right term.
Yes.
But in the process of doing that, he doesn't get what she's asking, which is the name of the person.
Yes, and she does the whole nun. Gesture then.
Whereas the students who are not engaging in corrective monitoring, mm-hmm. arguably, that get what she's asking. So it's
And I think there's a nice element there of, because one of the things we noticed is that the primary recipients of the story, which often happens in classrooms, tends to be the teacher, which is a shame in a way. It's like, so in this word search, actually the student is more useful and is operating there as the recipient. Thank you.
Yes, Lucas Sarah.
I have a question about the turn taking. So you mentioned that they are launched on the second position, and I was curious to what extent is that actually different from conversation? Because in conversation, people do like itemized news increases, talk about all the time, so a very natural position is actually for a story to be in second position, or even as a second story. I'm not sure if they're going
to talk about. I mean, I forgot to mention, we've actually got some teacher stories that come up in this as well, which are kind of interesting in themselves. You kind of think, well, what's the purpose of that? Perhaps a model. But in terms of the positioning, I agree. I mean, I think the in conversation, you get them in first and second position.
Right.
So here it's just the fact that they're only in second. Perhaps not too much to write home about.
The first of the solicitation, which is a bit unusual.
Yeah.
Direct solicitation.
Yeah.
I'd say it's in second position. I saw an arm at the back. Yes?
I was just wondering to what extent the category story adequately encapsulates the phenomena which is actually being emergent from the interaction which is going on there. In the sense that And I think you capture that nicely in the second one, where it doesn't actually operate as a story as we would classically. You understand the story, and the students orientating to it as a series of questions, as a task, as a primary. So their primary orientation to this is not in telling a story, it's to deliver something adequate to the situation, which is a series of questions and responses. So if we're looking at as a category and beforehand as a story, we miss that part of the phenomena. And we can actually, I think you can look quite nicely at what is the category of story as in this, and then it falls up.
Yeah.
You get a nicer handle on what is actually a story.
Yeah, I mean, we have other things that are like tellings, but are not stories. Mm. As such, though, there's a lot of discussion about cultural elements, like, oh, back at home we do X, Y, and Z, and it's like a kind of telling, but we wouldn't classify that as a story. Just for this particular project, we only tried to kind of narrow down to what we considered to be stories, but I totally agree. I mean, in a way, some of the more interesting part is going on around the story. So, yeah, thank you.
We'll just get Stuart up while we get the next question. Yes, Mary.
I was really interested in the extent to which the kind of the vocabulary learning is embedded or exposed.
Yeah.
And I was thinking particularly in extract 2, so 17 to 19.
Yeah.
That's more kind of explicit teaching. But I wondered sort of once we get down to, so somebody snatched your phone, so it's sort of replacing burglary with snatched. Does that go anywhere next? So is there any kind of evidence that, say, the student understands that that's maybe a kind of learnable moment about vocabulary?
No, not in this class, not in this particular class. So, yeah, it's this kind of very implicit kind of throat. This is why I kind of came back to the emergent learnables kind of idea. And I think they tend to come up in most of the stories. So it's something that the teacher is doing. Are they effective?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is there some kind of intervention you could put in place around whether this is an effective way of teaching?
Or is it just being mindful of the question not being answered? This is what we kind of kept coming back to. Thank you.
We better keep on that, Kurt, and Paul, go want cake and have the questions instead. So thanks once again, Emma.